You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Even as we are a nation of immigrants, we're also a nation of laws. Undocumented workers broke our immigration laws, and I believe that they must be held accountable, especially those who may be dangerous. That's why over the past 6 years, deportations of criminals are up 80%. And that's why we're going to keep focusing enforcement resources on actual threats to our security.
We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
So there you have former President Obama and former President Clinton speaking out against illegal immigration. We are a nation of immigrants, but we do not want to allow illegal immigration. Look how far we've come. Clinton's remarks came in his State of the Union address January 1995. Obama's remarks were in an address to the nation November 2014 as he signed an executive order dealing with the Dream Kids. This is September the 22nd, 2022. We are live streaming right now as I speak at rumble.com. You can go to rumble.com, enter in the search engine, Larry Connors USA. It'll take you to our page. You push live. You're in studio with us. Glad to have you join us. So here we have President Obama and Clinton making it clear we cannot have illegals running across the face of this country. And yet that's what we have right now. We now have, on Biden's watch, 2 million illegals that we know of that we have, quote, processed. And by that, I mean, okay, we see you, we take a picture, we got a name, whatever, move on. Or they let them settle around the border communities and maybe migrate north as they choose to and overwhelm other areas. Or, as Biden was doing in the middle of the night, his ghost flights, putting them on planes and flying them up to the north around New York State and letting them out, often not telling communities they were coming, which is really ironic, isn't it? Because that was the same claim being made about Governor DeSantis when he sent just 50 illegals to Martha's Vineyard. Present day, the Democrats are all about an open border and let them all in. We're going to revisit those remarks by President Obama and Clinton a little bit later in this program. So you might want to make sure your friends, family, even your enemies are ready to hear again as they repeat, we should not have open borders. But now we have progressives running the country. And speaking of that, yesterday, Biden, in his speech at the UN, of course, we focused primarily on his remarks regarding Putin and Ukraine and Putin's remarks about the West, possibly that he might be willing to use nuclear weapons, and he wasn't bluffing. But there was something else that was very big in yesterday's statement as Biden was addressing the UN, and that dealt with what he called the climate crisis, the climate crisis. He told them, look what we're doing. We're back with the Paris Accord. And the U.S. is spending $369 billion to clean up the air. India and China apparently still looked at as developing nations, so they don't really have to follow all the Paris Accord that tightly. Remember, Trump dumped it shortly after he got in. Well, the fallout does continue over illegals sent to Martha's Vineyard. And we got Hans von Spakovsky to answer the question, These illegals are claiming that their constitutional rights were violated when they got sent to Martha's Vineyard, and you're saying they're not even U.S. citizens. Han's going to get into that, and the fact progressives in the House are moving forward to make illegals eligible to vote in federal elections. Plus, Senator Ted Cruz, has he joined the dark force of big tech censorship? Is Senator Ted Cruz on the wrong side? We'll get into that story. And Stacey Abrams claims there is no such thing as a fetal heartbeat. That's man-made gimmick to make you think there's a heartbeat. And then the death of Christianity and the loss of God. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Your eyes are burning. You're sneezing. It's allergy season. Pollen readings are sky high. Heck, you can even see that yellow powder on everything. So that's also inside your air conditioning ducts. I suggest you call Wellington Environmental. Now, other companies will be glad to do the job, but they're going to come to your home or business, count the air ducts, and begin increasing the cost. In fact, the quoted price might even double. Wellington offers one price, no extras. You'll be charged exactly what Wellington quotes. So this is easy for you. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You will breathe easier. Wellington has a AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
From the day I came to office, we've led with bold climate agenda. We rejoined the Paris Agreement, convened the major climate summits, helped deliver critical agreements on the COP26. We helped get two-thirds of the world's GDP on track to limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. And now, I've signed a historic piece of legislation here in the United States that includes the biggest, most important climate commitment we have ever made in the history of our country. $369 billion toward climate change.
Yeah, I tell you, they were just so excited to hear that at the UN. We're not paying for it. The U.S. of A. is going to pay for it. They're going to pay $369 billion to clean up the environment. Now, you know, and I know, and they know, one country can't clean up everything. But this is the idea that we're going to be doing more than our part. And who's paying for it? That would be you. Yeah, you. Listen, I want to remind you of something. The Paris Agreement, you have to bear with me, I'm finding a little sore throat here. The Paris Agreement that Trump got out of as soon as he got into office, tore it up, said, we're not going to do that because they're not abiding. In particular, India and China are among the largest polluters in the world. They're not abiding by it. You know why, in part, they're not abiding by it? Because they're still considered, let me get the exact wording here, they're still considered to be developing countries. In this case, rapidly developing countries. But this means that they have a right to kind of do things different than the U.S. of A. and United Kingdom. We are already developed. They're still developing. Problem is, all the onus of the Paris Treaty Accords is on developed nations in controlling emissions. And they're very quick to point out that when it comes to dealing with climate change, or as you heard Biden say, a climate crisis, I got to stop. I'm sorry. I had to stop right now. He used the word crisis, referenced the climate. He would not describe what's happening at the border as a crisis. Now, yesterday, the day before, the White House spokeswoman, she slipped up and called it, well, the crisis at the border. But generally, it's not being accepted as a crisis for the left. Unless you drop them into the middle of Martha's Vineyard, and now we have a crisis, a humanitarian crisis. All right, Larry, get back on track. Once again, back to the UN session yesterday, as President Biden was trying to make it clear what we're doing. And he told you about that $369 billion. And then to drive the point home to the other member nations sitting there, he told them exactly what we're going to be doing.
That includes tens of billions in new investments in offshore wind and solar, doubling down on zero-emission vehicles, increasing energy efficiency, supporting clean manufacturing. Our Department of Energy estimates that this new law will reduce U.S. emissions by 1 gigaton a year by 2030, while unleashing a new era of clean energy-powered economic growth. Our investments will also help reduce the cost of developing clean energy technologies worldwide, not just in the United States. This is a global game changer, and none too soon. We don't have much time. We all know we're already living in a climate crisis. No one seems to doubt it after this past year.
May I raise my hand and say I doubt it? I don't know exactly what climate crisis you're talking about. Yes, we have food shortages and droughts in some parts of the world that we often have occur. But then other scientists, and in fact, the founder of Greenpeace, which we had a part of his interview the other day, talking about all they're saying about the ice cap melting and all this. He said, that's not real science. That's just evolutionary processes. But they want to have something to raise money on, so it's got to be a climate crisis. Or as Al Gore said, an inconvenient truth. Send me your dollar. Send me your money right now. So again, you've got members of the UN sitting there listening to President Biden talking about what we're going to do. And they know sitting right in their midst are other countries that are also deeply responsible for emissions. Most climate scientists, regardless of which side of the fence they fall down on, if we have a crisis or not, they know and understand that China and India are significant sources of global carbon emissions. In fact, according to the Union of Concerned Scientists website, the top 10 emitters in the world, China at the top, at 10.06 GT. I guess that's gross tonnage released in the air, I assume. I could be wrong about that, but just you don't even have to know what the understanding is. Just notice the numbers. China at 10.6, the U.S. second at 5.41. India at 2.65. So, well, it seems like the U.S. is ahead of India, Larry. But we're apparently doing something. Those figures are from 2018. Russian Federation, 1.71. Japan, 1.16. Germany, 0.75. So forth and so on down. But when they point out those numbers, that was a sticking point for President George W. Bush, because he refused to get involved in what was then called the 1997 Kyoto Protocol. President Bush wrote, "I oppose the Kyoto Protocol because it exempts 80% of the world, including major population centers such as China and India, from compliance and would cause serious harm to the U.S. economy. He said that then in 1997, and you could say it again today. But this administration, though they know it, they just don't care. Their point is they're going to continue to push forward. Now, according to the Washington Post, China and India have said that they would honor their commitments to the Paris Agreement, originally referred to sometimes technically as the Paris Accords. And while emissions in their countries remain high, the fact that they're going to acknowledge it supposedly is a policy shift. Now, the Paris Agreement supposedly is a global emergency change that goes beyond national borders, obviously requiring international cooperation at all levels. So when they came up with the UN Climate Change Conference in Paris on December 2015, the historic Paris Agreement, they set out long-term goals for all nations: substantially reduce global greenhouse gas emissions, review countries' commitments every 5 years, provide financing to developing countries to help them mitigate climate change. And this is a legally binding international treaty that they got into on November 2016. But as soon as Trump came in shortly after that, he said, nix that, we're not going to do that anymore, because we're on the losing end of it. And yet they continue to push and claim that the Paris Agreement is going to be fair to everybody. Well, it's not. It's not fair to everybody. And just like we were doing with NATO when Trump... Now, I don't care if you like Trump or not. Look at the facts. When he went to NATO and said, these other countries are going to have to step up their commitment and money, or we're going to pull out. I mean, the left went berserk. How dare he's going to threaten our world of national security by doing that? No, actually what happened, and NATO was very happy to stay silent and let things play out. The NATO nations started throwing more money in, making a bigger contribution. So NATO was happy. We got more money. Same thing with UN on various things. Trump said, we're not going to front all of it. You guys got to step up. So the U.S. as of 2017, and these figures, I know they're not up to date because they keep changing, and I've gone to numerous sources. I'm trying to give you the best I have here. The U.S. is behind China, as I stated a moment ago, in annual emissions. But they point out, well, the U.S. is the leading cumulative emitter of all greenhouse gases per capita. That a person in the U.S. emits more than someone in India or China. You know why, don't you? Because you have a C-A-R or a T-R-U-C-K. You know what those are. They have an O-X, if they're lucky. They may have a D-O-N-K-E-Y or an A-S-S, depending on what you want to call it. So they do emit methane, of course, but it's not that bad compared to what your car does. So that's why they're going to continue to force you to comply. And in fact, at a congressional hearing, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Democrat in Michigan, raised an issue and posed a question directly to the Morgan Stanley CEO, Jamie Dimon, and what she's going to suggest when you listen to this, and we're telling you in advance what's coming, are you going to stop helping fund any oil and gas production? And his answer is hell no, basically. Listen.
You have all committed, as you all know, to transition the emissions from lending and investment activities to align with pathways to net zero in 2050. Do you know what the International Energy Agency has said is required to meet our global 2050 net zero targets of limiting global temperature rise to 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit or 1.5 degrees Celsius? So no new fossil fuel production starting today. That's like zero. So I would like to ask all of you and go down the list, because again, you all have agreed to doing this. Please answer with a simple yes or no. Does your bank have a policy against funding new oil and gas products, Mr. Dimon?
Absolutely not, and that would be the road to hell for America.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Sir, you know what? Everybody that got relief from student loans has a bank account with your bank, should probably take out their account and close their account.
Oh, that's a big threat. They don't have enough money to pay off their student loans, so they must have a lot of money in J.P. Morgan Chase, right? But Diamond's not going to buy into the argument. He's not just being realistic. He's being factual. That would be the road to hell for our country if we quit investing and helping oil and gas production companies. And speaking of student loans, he also made a point to knock Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness. He called that program badly done. He said, I wish they had targeted the people who actually need help. They still haven't fixed the underwriting. They haven't fixed the cost of college. We basically put a Band-Aid on, spent a lot of money, and we did not fix the problem. Jamie Dimon, J.P. Morgan CEO. Biden's plan obviously giving essentially $20,000 in student loan cancellation to Americans earning less than $125,000 a year if they receive Pell Grants. So Dimon denunciating the plan comes after a survey found a majority of Americans would not vote for candidates who support that same plan in the upcoming terms, the midterm elections. If you're on record as saying you support student loan forgiveness, according to this survey, the majority of Americans said 55.6%, you're not going to get my vote. See, they recognize that you can't buy your way out by throwing a Band-Aid on it, and you didn't really go to the great cost of what colleges are charging. And they got massive, massive alum and endowments. They should carry some of that burden, but they don't. Coming up, something else that Biden has announced the other day that China is extremely upset over. It says it's going to lead to death everywhere. Welcome back, and reminding you, we are live streaming on rumble.com. You can go to that page right now, enter in Larry Connors USA, and join us in studio. You can always subscribe for free, and we'll make it available for you. We do not sell your information. So, you know, the other day in the interview with CBS 60 Minutes, Scott Pelley, President Biden said, and I'm quoting here, the pandemic is over. Bum, 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 bum. The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID, he said. But we're doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over. Well, that's a, in fact, you point out, you notice no one's wearing masks. Well, actually, some still are. But he said everyone seems to be in pretty good shape, so I think it's changing. I think this is a perfect example of it, he said, as he walked to the Detroit Auto Show in advance of everyone else coming in. He was there mainly not to see fossil-fueled cars, but to see what they're doing on electric vehicles. Well, the moment he said it's over, here's a response from the Global Times government newspaper in China, the official communist propaganda sheet. Accusing Biden of declaring the coronavirus pandemic over, they say was a means of boosting Democrat processes and prospects in the upcoming midterm elections. They know how the game is played. They see it in China. And predicting that this would in turn, because Biden said that, quote, lead to a spike in cases and deaths throughout America. Now, I don't think they would really be that concerned if it did, but that's what they're claiming. Now, granted again, these are the Chinese commies, and they're going to say what they want to, and they're going to twist and turn everything to their advantage and put us and pit us against each other. So they want to tell you that Biden is doing it strictly for politics to saying it's over, which we'd always told you that before we got to midterm, it would be over. And they're also saying, and by doing that, he's going to cause deaths to hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans. The Global Times disagreeing with Biden, saying the comments were extremely irresponsible and dishonest in order to prevent a major defeat for Democrats in the November elections. Now, in China, they have a zero COVID policy. They had a lockdown of a city of 20 million. You know why? Because they had 600, that's 600 out of 20 plus million, 600 cases testing positive for COVID. So they locked down everything. There's a piece of video that came out of China that you can tell an office building, a major office building filled with thousands of workers is being told, we found COVID in the building, somebody in the building has COVID, and they were going to lock the doors and keep everybody in the building. Well, they're running for the exits, trying to get out. I'm only kept there in my J-O-B for the next 6 to 9 months, if that's what they end up doing. One of the experts that they rely on stated that Biden's a weak president. See, they're playing on the drum some of us have been beating, obviously. And then instead of making decisions based on scientific assessment, Biden bluntly announced the end of the pandemic, which was absolutely unscientific, extremely irresponsible. And it's going to be chaotic for Americans, if not deadly. And here they say something, I kind of want to point this out, because they say, we know the virus better. Well, I bet you do. I'll bet you do, because it came right out of your country, didn't it? But again, remember when Trump would point out the Chinese virus, the China flu? They didn't like it being thrown around like that and being labeled that way. But now they want to say, we know the virus better. And how do they know it's better? Well, because they got more background on it, correct? Of course. Coming up, has Senator Ted Cruz gone to the dark side? You want to hear this story?
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Some car dealers might try to take advantage of you. One quick way to spot it, look at the sticker price. Jay Ackerman told me, especially in these times, he wants to reward the generations of buyers and the new customers. So Ackerman Toyota sells every car at sticker price. No markup. What you see is what you pay. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
It was 1989, my thoughts were short, my hair was long. Caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Now what if a cartel wanted to exclude publishers that serve rural areas or those whose audience is predominantly lower income? There's a recent article that put it this way. These self-appointed mainstream and left-wing media cartels are allowed to exclude based on the usual totally subjective factors they always do, such as trustworthiness, fake news, extremism, misinformation, hate speech, conspiracy, correction policy, expertise, authoritativeness, etc. To my fellow conservatives, do we think that forcing big tech and big media to get into a room together to collude and agree on the terms under which news can appear on tech platforms. Do we think that's going to result in anything good for our voices? Do we think that's going to ameliorate or eliminate censorship? The JCPA is meant to help small local publishers. But importantly here, the text of the bill makes clear that it will actually crush them.
Those are the words of Senator Mike Lee speaking out against the JCPA, the Journalism Competition and Protection Act. Now, this allows the media to form a cartel, as you heard him describe it, to negotiate with big tech. Senator Mike Lee, Republican of Utah, along with Senators Cotton of Arkansas, Blackburn Republican, Tennessee, say the media industry should not receive any special treatment and that this bill is going to lead to more censorship of free speech. I have to agree with the question and answer that, no, it does not do any good for us. When you hear Senator Lee say, do we really think it's going to be anything good for us? No. No, it's not. But here comes the other shoe hitting the floor. Senator Ted Cruz. I know, you, Larry, this has got to be fake news. No, Senator Ted Cruz, and I keep looking to see if there's been an update on this story, if he's added any remarks, and I have not seen them. I'm not saying that he hasn't, but I have not seen anything that says he has changed his opinion. He is commending the sponsors of the JCPA, the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act. He said, let me commend the authors for the hard work they put in on an important issue. He went on to basically say it will be good. And he worked closely with the lead Democrat sponsor, Senator Amy Klobuchar, Republican, Minnesota, to get his amendment through. And so thanks to Cruz's efforts, the media bailout bill was voted out of committee and now faces a floor vote. Cruz said, I had extensive conversations with Senator Klobuchar. I sat down with her, heard her concerns, and we then worked together on this agreement. But again, Senator Lee said, I'm a little bit confused by the sponsor's support for this amendment. Specifically, he's talking about Cruz. He said, I applaud anything that restricts censorship by big tech, but I don't think this bill does what the sponsors claim it does. He said it retains a fundamental flaw of attempting to improve competition by sanctioning the formation of cartels, something that our antitrust laws go out of their way to prohibit. And he said, moreover, it ends up favoring large conglomerate publishers over smaller local publishers. Now, anytime you have that, you end up what you have in many cities right now. When a city, wherever you're living, if you're in a major city, be it St. Louis, Houston, Dallas, San Francisco, I could name others, and I don't know for a fact that all of them, but many of them have become one paper towns, one newspaper, one voice, and it's usually liberal. Now, you still have your TV stations, but if they're doing actual news, then they're not showing a bias, or shouldn't be. But often, the one newspaper town, it knows the stranglehold it has upon what it puts out and what the public gets to see and what it doesn't. So it got voted out of committee on the Senate Judiciary Committee when Cruz said that, I think I said a moment ago she's a Republican, slapped me in the face. Larry, wake up. You're on too much cold medicine. She's not a Republican. But anyway, they voted it out of committee, but here's what happened. Senator Marshall Blackburn, Republican of Tennessee, and Josh Hawley, Senator Republican of Missouri, voted against it. Senator Blackburn long maintaining that the bill makes it easier for big tech and the media establishment to collude. And I think she's right. Hawley opposes antitrust exemptions on principle, so he's against it. In fact, Republican concerns with this bill, and by that I mean conservatives and those who want to protect our First Amendment, were so great that Senator Rand Paul, who was one of the bill's original sponsors, ditched his support for it earlier this month. But despite that, and opposition from floor leader Kevin McCarthy, and opposition from Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, and Senator Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, and a wide range of bipartisan experts, the bill's been rescued to once again be presented to the floor. But Ted Cruz, who's always presenting himself as a conservative firebrand, is on board with this. I've been looking all over trying to get a clear understanding of why he would do that, and I cannot come up with an answer for you. He's commending the sponsors, which would include Klobuchar, and he wanted to get something done. I just cannot break the puzzle. And he is yet to issue any additional statements. Now, again, if you're looking at what you're trying to do, you're trying to prevent big tech from running over smaller operations and big conglomerate publishers and news outlets. But this apparently doesn't do that. And in fact, it forms this cartel that would be contrary to our laws regarding basically giving them media favors, special favors, and so forth as a violation of antitrust. Most folks, again, those who are against it, and I did say, based on what I've seen, I'd be against it, and I think you should be watching for how this plays out. And again, it's called the JCPA, the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act. That sounds very good. We're going to have competition, and we're going to preserve journalism, real journalism, not CNN type stuff. But it would create an antitrust exemption for the media industry. You know, we've already done that to some extent with big tech. By that, I mean Facebook, Twitter, all of that conglomerate. They pretty much have free rein, and they cannot be held accountable. I don't see anything in here that's going to help be... Senior technology correspondent at Breitbart said the bill would be used to curb misinformation. At least that's what they're claiming. One House Judiciary Committee hearing, the president CEO of the News Media Alliance said the media needs to be bailed out because, quote, it acted as a clear antidote to the scores of misinformation impacting communities across the country. But you have to go back to what Senator Lee was questioning. Do we really think that this is going to be good for America, much less good for conservatives? Every time I've done a story in the past, whenever I've done a story and over the decades, whoever did the story on, they didn't really like what I did. So we should have done that. I said, well, that's the problem. You wanted me to write it like I'm your PR guy. I'm not your PR guy. I'm a newsman, and I'm going to do the story as objectively and as fairly as I can. And I know you don't like some of the stuff in there. But again, I'm not your PR person. I should have said, if you want a PR person, go to the White House and get the spin doctor out of the White House press corps to come forward, regardless of which administration. That's what their job amounts to. So there are certain words that we're told again by the woke culture you cannot use. Have you called somebody a Hoosier lately? I don't mean like... Yeah, did you call somebody a Hoosier? I'll just put it that way. Shame on you. Wait till you hear this story coming up.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
Here's exciting news for Cafe Napoli. Soon there will be Napoli Sea. Unique, exquisite, the finest, freshest seafood, lobster, crab, the best caviar. Napoli Sea will be next door to Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles. So it's going to be easy to satisfy your seafood craving. are the finest Italian food. Napoli C, coming soon. Joining Cafe Napoli St. Charles, Counting Country, and Clayton.
And all those things I didn't say.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You know, you do have to be more and more careful nowadays of what you say that might offend someone. And you might think that's not offensive, but here's the deciding line. And you must remember this. If it offends them and their viewpoint, it's offensive, period. You do understand that. If it offends them, then it's offensive to them. It may not be offensive to others, but it is to them. There's a question about a word right now that has suddenly been used often in history, and I'm looking at a piece that was written about it. And I had to tell you, when they first started describing the word, I thought, what are they talking about? What word is this? It took me a few moments. That's how far removed I was from that being offensive. But again, that's my perspective. For someone that's involved directly and maybe more enlightened and woke folks than me, oh, I know folks, sometimes that's offensive to people. They probably caught on very quickly. But here it is. The word S word certainly has had its share of history. Huh, S word. They say it's a five-letter word ending in W. Can you figure that out? Some of you probably have already. Researchers saying, looking at the meaning, for many, the S word is either offensive or historically accurate, either offensive or historically accurate. What's it doing? It's portraying a female Indian woman. Now you know the word. Now I'm going to use the word because I want to make sure we're all on the same page. The word is squaw. I grew up in Texas. I don't ever remember hearing the word, but I never heard it used in an intended offensive way to someone, but it probably was. It was not like the N-word, which we all knew early, or at least I did after my dad yanked me up one day when I was about 5 years old and said, you don't use that word. I was just repeating what I heard. I didn't know. Dumb kid then and probably a dumber kid now. But the origins of the word historically refers to, obviously, indigenous women. Some say that the word also refers to a female part. Now, I won't get into all the details of that, but then one historical consultant says it means the totality of being female. And he said the Algonquin version of the word does not translate to a woman's specific female anatomy. Merriam-Webster's online dictionary defines the term, at least it does now, often offensive, an American Indian woman, usually despairingly, woman, wife. And yet for a long time we've had the word used in different things that were being merchandised, in particular using that term. There was a vegetable crate and vegetables sold under the name of squaw peas. There's an urban dictionary that you might be familiar with. It says the S word, quote, does not mean that female body part, and the word comes from Massachusetts, Algonquian tribe, and means female young woman, and that is not related to the Mohawk word, which would mean part of a female body part. And supposedly there's absolutely no derogatory meaning in using it, unless you're using it to try to offend someone. One of those looking at this and deciding what's good and bad about it. He said, I understand the concern of Indian women who feel insulted by this word, but I respectfully suggest we reclaim our language rather than let it be taken over. Now, I'm sure you could find a battle on both sides of that statement. I think you have to go back to what I said earlier. If it's offensive to the one that considers it offensive, then it's offensive. Which brings us to the word Hoosier. Many in the St. Louis Midwest area and even in Indiana, they call themselves Hoosiers too, but for some it's just considered offensive. If you're a Hoosier, you're a country bumpkin, a hick or something like that. The general concept. Kind of like when in Texas, if you were an Aggie, you were the butt of all the jokes if you went to A&M. And I remember using the term Aggie and always telling Aggie jokes. And so did my dad. Until one day his boss called in him and some of the other guys, they were always throwing around Aggie jokes because he had graduated from A&M. And he said, do you guys know what you call an Aggie after he graduates? Oh, no, this is a good Aggie joke. No, what do you call him? He said, boss. That ended that conversation. Forever. So be careful on how you address someone. If it's offensive to them, it's offensive, period. Coming up, we're going to take a closer look at what's going to be happening with the illegals. And you know some of those sent to Martha's Vineyard and then sent out? They want to go back. They want to go back.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.